Real Three. Yes, you were telling me, Katie, about the Orthodox place you went to. What sort of place was this?
It was a house, I suppose originally a nice Edwardian house. It was completely dark. There was only lino everywhere. There were long trestle tables, and the girls were sitting there eating their breakfast, and each one of them had a little bit of, we had bread and marge, and they all had a little pot of jam, and no one ever offered us any jam. I remember we took this to be a personal insult. Anyway, after we were looking, I don't remember what we were doing during the day. We must have been looking what we could do, my friend.
Just the two of you there, was it?
Yes.
Who was your friend?
My friend was the sister-in-law of Peter Keane, actually. She's called Renee Morton, and she came to England before me. She already had matriculated in Czechoslovakia, so although she had various jobs as a maid of all works, she was always trying to get back to university, which she managed in the end. But she was two or three years older than I, and it was very good to have her, I must say. Anyway, after about 2 weeks, the matron of this place said to us, "And who pays for you?" So we said, "Nobody." So we left. I must have come back to Erich Duschinski, but I don't remember anything about it.
This was a Jewish place, wasn't it? Jewish Orthodox.
English Orthodox Jewish place, yes. It was an experience, I must say.
Yes, were you getting any impression about the Jewish community in England?
The English Jewish community. Well, we the ones who were Zionists on that farm, and we made quite a lot of good friends, actually. But they weren't really typical, because they were, although they came largely from Orthodox homes, there was really no religion of any sort at that place. It was all pioneering and going to Israel, and it was very socialist. So that had nothing to do with it. What happened next?
Yes, this Orthodox place, though, was there a lot of religion there?
Oh, yes, there was a lot of praying, yes. And of course, we didn't know any of the prayers, so we were looked down upon even more, I think.
Yes.
But we both felt it all the time to be rather amusing, but it had no effect on our psyche, I must say.
Did you expect better treatment as they were Jewish? It was a Jewish organization running it?
Not really. No, I mean, I don't think we expected anything, really, of anyone. When we came back, Renee said, we must get to a place where there's a university. But I think there were some things in between which I can't recall. I know I had a job with the United Dairies washing milk bottles, where I acquired my chilblains, because we were standing in Wellington's in the water in the cold, washing these urchin bottles. By now it must be, I mean, there was a machine, but nevertheless you got terribly wet. But when that was, I can't tell you. Then she said, we must get to the university town. And she said, I'll get myself a job as a skinny in Oxford, and I'll find something for you. And she went first, and she got herself a job as a maid of all works with a vicar. And she found me a job a bit further out on a farm in Cumnor Hill. And that farm belonged to somebody called Delamere, who was a cousin of the poet. And he was not all that young. He had married a Danish woman who felt terribly isolated. and that wasn't too bad, actually. I learned a lot about agriculture there. I did a lot of work, also in the house, but it was pleasant. They were very nice to me. I remember some odd things. I mean, his mother had a little house a bit further out and had a maid, and she asked me to tea, and this girl had a young man who was a prison warder, and he had brought a colleague for me. They had to suggest it foursome, and so I thought it was rather touching. But anyway, this old lady was an absolute tyrant to her daughter-in-law and told her to have all her teeth out before she had her babies. And this young dame was already gone, like, anything to her teeth. It's very strange what one remembers. The child apparently had an allergy for cow's milk, and I was treated to milk a goat for this child, and this goat had it in for me. First of all, she ate up my small watercolor container. Then she usually tried to piddle into the bucket when I was milking her. So I wasn't very much in their good books when we had to throw the milk out, which happened several times. But my friend, that vicar had a friend who was, I think, a German painter called Siegel. And she had some of my drawings, which she showed to, the vicar showed these drawings to this man. And somehow or other, they approached Kokoschka, whom I had met in Prague, incidentally, and who was very nice to me because he liked young girls. And Kokoschka wrote a letter to recommend me for a scholarship. I didn't know anything about all this. Until one day, I had a letter from the British Council offering me a scholarship, out of the blue, completely out of the blue. And I went to London, said goodbye to the Delamere's.
What did it mean, the scholarship? Was it a sum of money, as well as the tuition?
They paid the tuition fees, that was all. And they sent me, because it was the British Council, they sent me theatre tickets and tickets for the opera and things like that. But nobody thought that I would have to live as well. So there was a Czech hostel called the Canterbury Hall, which was run by the Czech Trust Fund. The Czech Trust Fund held the Czech money, which the British confiscated, that money here from the Republic. So there was, and René and I got a room, and there was a bath. It was luxury. But we, in order to pay for this, we worked in the morning and in the evening in the kitchens. So we did at least, I don't know how many hours, but we did a fairly good working day there. And there must have been some money, some little amount of money, but I don't remember. There was something also for materials. The Czechs, I think, gave us some, but very little, I think.
So Winnie was involved with this as well, was she?
She was trying to get a scholarship, and she got one from the Czechs. She had a scholarship to read chemistry in St. Andrews. And I got a scholarship to the Polytechnic in Regent Street.
By this time, this would have been what date, do you think? How long had the war progressed?
That was 42, 43, something like that.
Yes. Your, the difference between the English culture that you were experiencing and Prague. Was it a great culture shock coming to a country like England?
Oh, well, I didn't have the opportunity to meet any English people really until I got to art school. And
how did that fit, you know, compare?
I couldn't cope with it because, first of all, the art establishment in Prague was very Paris orientated, and by that time had absorbed people like Henri Picasso and Matisse, and particularly the Cubists, which were really a high point of Czech painting. And I wasn't taught purely academic basics. So when I got to the school, which had lost all their young staff because they all joined the forces, they recalled the people from retirement who were still involved with the sort of pre-Raphaelite establishment and for whom already the Impressionists were anathema. But they were actually very good teaching basic skills like anatomy and perspective. I really couldn't absorb it. I wasn't good enough at that stage to accept what they offered. And what I showed them didn't interest them, and they didn't think it was any good. So that was really rather a negative experience. And I had met Otto in the Canterbury Hall, and we got married in 1943. So that terrible pressure of having to find 5p was off because we were both in the same boat, and it didn't, you know, it wasn't. But I had the teachers who were friends of mine, where I gave you the name now, were very friendly with the Ustinovs who lived on top of them. And they were very keen on my drawings, and Peter Ustinov's father found me a job in a studio. And there I did experience real animosity. I wasn't very good, because I had never learned to do the things which they expected of me. And the girl who ran the studio, the man who owned it was a Swiss sculptor, never there. And the girl who ran the studio didn't want me. I was a sort of an intruder. And they managed to get me out, but I wasn't really good enough anyway. So after that, I thought I ought to do some war work, and I worked making goggles for the Air Force. But that I was already married then.
And this was in London, was
this
it?
Was in London,
it
yes.
Would that have been in a big factory or a small one?
Well, it was a small workshop, subcontracting for the Air Force. We did other things as well, but I mostly worked on the goggles. It wasn't unpleasant or anything. It was during the time of the doodlebugs. So we were running for our lives several times. But that wasn't, it didn't really do anything much. Then I didn't do anything for quite a while. I had my daughter not until 1950. And I seem to have lost these years in between. Okay. In 1946, that's right, the boy, Gilbert Hunter came to us.
And had you heard anything about your parents at all?
To look on the lists.
Yes, I meant during the war, you know, after...
But we knew nothing about what happened. We had all suspicions, but we didn't. Until we saw these terrible films which came out, when one was faced with what had actually occurred, we didn't know the extent, and one was hoping that they would turn up somehow, because people from Terezin turned up, the ones who had not been thrown out. And when we actually heard that they were not going to be on any list and hadn't survived, well, I was completely dumb. You know, there I think it was a trauma which never got dissolved, because I felt very little. It wasn't only them, it was also Fritz Sushinsky. It was absolutely, it was Peter Keen, it was everybody. There was no one of my lot who had survived. But no one. And my husband's father, who was a widower, who had stayed behind, of course, was also killed. And he, my husband and the two brothers who managed to get out to Israel, never got over the fact that he was left behind. Never.
What were they? Did they feel guilty?
Yes,
or?
But I mean, he didn't want to go. They went on this ship, you know, which was, they were then interned and when they got there. Down the Danube, I think they went.
Yes, that must have been a very dark time.
Well,
for you, you know.
It was complete, it was, you know, everything was erased. There wasn't anyone. And nobody. And we found the only ones, as you know, were George Hartmann, who had survived.
You were telling me earlier, Katie, about the shock of seeing the films.
Yes.
Of the Holocaust, and how this was the first you really knew.
Where one actually became aware of the enormity of what had happened. And it did cause a sort of anemia, I think, really.
What happened about your family's property? Because you've shown me the photographs, and
yes,
it would seem a wealthy family.
Yes.
That you came from.
Well, it was very comfortable, because although my father had this thing about losing his money and always saying to my mother, you will make me bankrupt, because she always would cook the books in the middle of the month with the cook that put it together in the kitchen. She always exceeded her allowance. But I think he must have worked that in, so that... No, he was basically a very sweet man, but I mean, she was... don't think she was extravagant at all, really, but if I think back, we lived basically very modestly. I mean, to have people work for you, that was really the usual thing there. But, and it was a big household. But otherwise, we were much more modestly brought up, I think, than my grandchildren are, whose demands are much greater than ours ever were, I think.
But were you able to get your property back?
Well, what happened was that the house in Dublin was, after many years, none of the things like bank accounts, of course, or things to do with what the contents of our flat or all the pictures or anything, that all disappeared, of course, completely. And I never tried to search for any of it, because it was quite useless. It was stolen at various points in history, I presume. I mean, I don't really know, but the house was there, and the communists confiscated it, and in the end I got it back. Of course, I mean, just a minimal amount of what it was actually worth, but we did.
Would that have been after the communist regime fell?
Yes. But I didn't. it didn't occupy any sort of importance because we felt that there was too much distance, and what happened was so much more important than these things. Mm-hmm.
Did you get confirmation of what had happened to your family, your parents and brother?
No, but I mean there were lists of people who went and I had a very close friend in America who survived. He and his wife survived Auschwitz. He is incidentally, he was the editor of the history of the Czechoslovak Jews. And I think his archive material wasn't finished, went to Prague and to all sorts of other places. When he died, I just found his last letter. And he was the one who really knew a bit about my parents, not much. But he said something awful about my brother. He was very musical, but he said there was a piano in Terezin, and he would open the lid and just play one note. Just one note. That one can so visualize the child doing it. But they went very late. I think it was one of the last transports. And Terezin was seen from so many different angles by so many different people. I mean, the way Honza and Dirka talk about Terezin is completely different, for instance, from what Helga King says about herself and Peter Keen. And the very intensive artistic life that actually went on. And there were some wonderful people. I mean, Fritta was, I don't know whether you ever saw any of his drawings, Ullmann and Fritta, and there were three or four wonderful people in Terezin. And the music was extraordinary. And they actually got as far as putting the opera on, but then the Germans, I think, got wise to what it was all about, and then they went to Auschwitz.
Your contact with the Hartmann brothers, you were saying you saw their names on the list.
Yes.
Yes.
Otto sent them a telegram saying, I, Otto Fischl, am the husband of... that was when they came.
That would be
1946.
Did you recognize them when they came?
Not at all. I had seen them and their children the last time. And, there wasn't any contact at home, or very little. And they were very handsome, both of them. Their hair was still very short. And Honza was particularly given to eating the most terrible things. There was still rationing. And he would ask me to get him some Rice Krispies, and would put lots of cocoa on it, and tinned milk and sugar. And it was a sort of a sweet, but it was absolutely vile. He would eat that just by the spoonful.
Did you get any impression? Did they talk about what they had endured? Was it easy to talk to them?
I think I was polishing the floor, I remember. And I can't remember whether it was one or the other who talked about it, but only once and never again. And I never asked them anything because I never felt I wanted to ask them. But then Honza produced this drawing, which is now in the Imperial War Museum. This is actually how the contact was established. That when I looked through my things, I found the drawing, and I thought, I'll ask him whether he would like to donate it to the British War Museum. And that really started the contact. So it is arguable that if you hadn't interviewed him, none of this would have happened. I think this sort of liberation which he must feel after he had given you this interview, none of this would have happened.
This drawing there at the time, 1946, when had he done that?
In our house. in our house.
What was it of? Can you remember?
It was a chimneys in the back smoking and I think one of the prisoners in front. Just as a pencil drawing, but it was very direct and I think very well remembered. You know, it was very immediate. It was immediate. But I saw a lot of drawings in Prague and I don't know what happened to those. I keep asking him, but he doesn't know.
That Hansa did.
I think the ones which you have probably seen are only a fraction of what there was, and they weren't the best ones. The ones I saw in Prague were extraordinary. They must have just, I don't know what he's done to those. He doesn't know either.
Did he talk to you about the subject matter of that picture? Did he tell you?
I don't remember. I doubt it. Well, I mean, it was always understood that that's what happened. They talked about things like when they got back to Prague and they pursued this SS man. That sort of thing they talked about. But about the actual experiences in the camp, they did not talk.
Physically, did they look well a year later, 46? That would have been, wouldn't it?
Yes. They looked in pretty good shape, yes, by then. I mean, they must have been as strong as oxen to have, because they were very ill, both of them, particularly George was very ill. They made a remarkable recovery, obviously.
How about their mental state? Did you get any idea of how they had been, had suffered psychologically?
I think very little, really. I mean, they were terribly, their parents had a lot of stuff here. They brought a lift out to England and they had access to, there was some money in a bank account and they had access to that. And there were books by this Czech singer, Emmy Destin, their father had acquired her books and her lots of her things after she died. And lots of it was in the lift, and they immediately wanted to sell some of it to have some money. So, I mean, they were very eager. They went to Lily White's and bought things, you know. And it was this complete change of scene, which was the important thing, I think, you know. And I had the feeling, I didn't have the feeling, but I, with hindsight now, I think that they were very eager to put it all behind them. But then the year after, we went to Prague to visit them. And we stayed in their flat. And there was this aunt who had come back, the second wife of their mother's brother. And there you could feel the tensions while we were there. But again, you know, I had a friend from before the war who also went through all this and who had come back from Auschwitz and who lived in Brno, and he came to stay with me while we were in the flat there. And I had a very strong impression of this sort of tremendous strength of this chap, you know. He overshadowed this visit. I felt so extraordinarily impressed by this, that nothing had moved him, you know, and he had stayed behind his brother because his father was in England, but his mother didn't get out, so he stayed with her, and he couldn't keep her alive. We're very close friends now. They live in Germany, actually. But there was this tremendous difference, you know, that you felt he's like a rock. And that never changed. I mean, they came out in 67. I looked after their daughter. They sent the girls to England. They didn't want to keep them in Germany. He had a professorship in London, but didn't really like it, didn't know the language, and the Germans asked for him. So he went to Strasbourg. Mm. And he's lived there, Stuttgart, sorry, and they lived there ever since, and I stayed with them. And I must say, you know, one's feelings about the Germans are tinged by all the things that happened, but these people are so nice to him. And they play chamber music all the time. They're all retired physicists, but they're so. This is such a cohesive group of human beings. You can't have any other feelings than admiration, really. You know.